Welcome to Listen 2. This is Ted. The news was published on Friday, October 11th. Joining us today are Eric and Kate to discuss some fascinating new research on autism. Let's dive right in. Today we're discussing new research on autism that suggests autistic brains are differently wired. Let's start with the key findings. Eric, what did the study reveal about neuron density in autistic brains?
Well, Ted, this study's findings are pretty eye-opening. They discovered that in certain regions of the cerebral cortex, autistic children have lower neuron density compared to the control group. In layman's terms, that means there are fewer brain cells in areas that we typically associate with memory, learning, and problem solving. It's like having a less crowded classroom, if you will.
Hold up, Eric. You're painting an incomplete picture here.
I was getting to that, Kate. As I was saying, while some areas showed lower density,
the amygdala showed higher neuron density. That's crucial information you're glossing over. The amygdala is key for processing emotions and sensory information. It's like having a supercharged emotional
center. I appreciate your enthusiasm, Kate, but let's not overlook the significance of reduced neuron density in the cortex. This could potentially explain some of the challenges autistic individuals face with certain cognitive tasks. It's like having fewer workers in a factory. It might affect productivity in some areas.
Oh, come on, Eric. You're jumping to conclusions faster than a kangaroo on a trampoline. Neuron density alone doesn't determine brain function. It's way more complex than that. Many autistic people excel at problem solving despite these differences. It's like saying a computer with fewer but more efficient processors can outperform one with more but slower ones.
You both raise interesting points. Now let's talk about how the researchers conducted this study. What made it different from previous research?
The methodology here was quite innovative, Ted. They used advanced magnetic resonance diffusion weighted imaging on living children, ages 9-11. This is a significant leap forward compared to previous postmortem studies. It's like the difference between studying a car while it's running versus examining it after it's been in a junkyard.
Exactly. And let's not forget the scale of this study. They compared 142 autistic children to 8,171 controls. That's a massive sample size that gives us more reliable results than ever before. We're talking about a data set bigger than a whale's appetite.
While the sample size is impressive, we should be cautious about generalizing these findings to all autistic individuals. Autism spectrum disorders are incredibly diverse. It's not one size fits all. We need to remember that this study, while groundbreaking, is just one piece of a very complex puzzle.
Oh, quit being such a wet blanket, Eric. While caution is important, this study provides valuable insights into the neurological differences in autism. It supports what neurodiversity advocates have been shouting from the rooftops for years, that autistic brains are uniquely wired, not broken or deficient.
Kate, I think you're getting a bit ahead of yourself here. We need more research to understand the implications of these structural differences. It's like finding a new species. Exciting, yes, but we need to study it further before drawing sweeping conclusions.
But this study is a crucial step towards recognizing autism as a unique brain structure, rather than a set of undesirable behaviors. It's like finally acknowledging that dolphins aren't just weird fish, but a whole different kind of magnificent creature.
Let's put this research into historical context. Can you think of a similar breakthrough in autism research from the past?
Absolutely, Ted. The discovery of genetic factors in autism in the 1970s was a pivotal moment. Twin studies showed that autism had a strong hereditary component. This was a game changer, shifting our understanding of autism from a purely environmental cause to a biological one. It's like finding out that the blueprint for a house is in the DNA, not just in the construction process.
While that was important, I'd argue that the refrigerator mother theory's debunking in the 1960s.
Kate, the genetic discovery was far more scientifically grounded. It paved
the way. Let me finish, Eric. The refrigerator mother theory caused immense harm. Its debunking was crucial for destigmatizing autism and supporting families. It's like finally telling people that the earth isn't flat. It changed everything.
Both events seem significant. How do they relate to this new research on brain structure?
Well, Ted, the genetic studies laid the groundwork for investigating biological differences in autism. This new research is a direct continuation of that approach. It's like we've been building a road, and now we're adding new lanes to it, expanding our understanding of the biological basis of autism.
I couldn't disagree more, Eric. This new study is more aligned with debunking harmful theories. It supports the neurodiversity perspective that autistic brains are simply different, not deficient. It's like finally recognizing that left-handed people aren't broken, just wonderfully unique.
Kate, while I appreciate your perspective, we can't ignore the potential challenges associated with these structural differences. They might explain certain autistic traits. It's like understanding why some cars are better at off-roading while others excel on the racetrack. Different structures lead to different capabilities.
Or they might explain autistic strengths. We need to move away from deficit-based thinking about autism. It's high time we celebrated these differences instead of pathologizing them. Think of it like finally appreciating jazz after years of only valuing classical music.
Kate, science isn't about moving towards or away from any particular viewpoint. It's about understanding the facts. We need to approach this objectively without letting our personal beliefs cloud our judgment.
And the fact is, Eric, this study shows autistic brains are uniquely wired, supporting the neurodiversity paradigm. It's like finding scientific proof that being a night owl or a morning lark is just a natural variation, not a disorder.
Looking to the future, how might this research impact autism diagnosis and treatment? Eric, what's your take?
This could lead to brain imaging becoming a diagnostic tool for autism. Ted, it might help identify autism earlier and more accurately. Imagine being able to spot autism as easily as we can spot a broken bone on an X-ray. It could revolutionize early intervention.
That's a slippery slope, Eric. We should be cautious about reducing
autism. Kate, earlier diagnosis could mean earlier interventions and support.
Not if those interventions aim to make autistic people appear normal, rather than supporting their unique needs and strengths. We're talking about people, not machines to be reprogrammed.
Interesting points. What about potential new therapies based on this research?
Well, Ted, we might see therapies targeted at modulating neuron density or connectivity in specific brain regions. It's like fine-tuning an engine to optimize performance. This could potentially help address some of the challenges associated with autism.
Eric, that sounds dangerously close to trying to cure autism. We should focus on accommodations and support, not changing brain structure. It's like trying to fix left-handedness instead of just providing left-handed scissors.
But Kate, if we can alleviate some of the challenges associated with autism, shouldn't we explore that option? Many individuals and families struggle with certain aspects of autism. It's like having the ability to ease chronic pain. Why wouldn't we want to help?
Those challenges are often just differences in how autistic people experience the world. We should change society, not autistic brains. It's like realizing we need to build ramps instead of trying to cure people who use wheelchairs.
That's an idealistic view, Kate. In reality, many autistic individuals and their families do seek ways to manage difficult symptoms. We can't ignore their needs in pursuit of a purely societal solution.
And many autistic adults argue that those symptoms are an integral part of who they are. We need to listen to autistic voices in this debate. It's like asking deaf people if they want to be cured. Many would say no because it's part of their identity and culture.
Well, this has certainly been an enlightening and passionate discussion. It's clear that this new research opens up a world of possibilities, but also raises important ethical questions. As we move forward, it's crucial that we consider multiple perspectives, and most importantly, involve autistic individuals in these conversations about their own neurology. Thank you, Eric and Kate, for sharing your insights today.